welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Pixelated Sausage Show. Hi, 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 hi. How are y'all doing? You may be asking yourself or noticing, hey now, Mark Krzyznes, the host, that's your name? That's me, Mark Krzyznes. Hi. You may be saying, why is the episode out today on a Wednesday? That is, if I manage to get this episode out, then, well, I've got some things to discuss with y'all. But first, let's just give you an idea of what to look forward to in this episode. We've got a handful of games, including Stolen Realm, Arzet, the Jewel of Paramore, Top Racer Collection, Airhead, 10 Seconds to Win, and Violet Wisteria. But before we get to all that goodness, so I've been talking a big game the last episode or two about how streaming was coming back. We were getting ready to stream and it was going to be a good time. And it only took, excluding the introductory, hey, this is what's going to be happening with Pixelated Sausage and Streaming Stream. It only took one stream and a third for me to say, you know what? No, this isn't happening. And the main issue and the reason for the quick change of heart, change of plans, is the issue I was expecting to have with it, which is the way my days work, my schedule and all that. My time to stream was not going to be an ideal time for streaming, which would be mid to late afternoon into early evening Central Time. So starting at 3 p.m. Central Time and going for 3 to 4 hours every night was just not the right time. Not the right time. I would need a significantly larger audience to make that worthwhile. A lot of my audience is on the older side and still prefers consuming their content in audio form. So it made sense for it not to work out. However, I want to believe that with one death comes a new and better life, and that what this has led to is me going through and finding the things that don't work, and this being another thing that doesn't work, in order to get to what will ultimately lead to the best content possible for everyone and the most enjoyable experiences. So what my decision became is, and why the show is moving to Wednesdays, is to bring Attack the Backlog back in podcast, quote-unquote podcast form, but this time really in a more traditional podcast form where I put out a weekly episode that is essentially an update on my progress with whatever I'm playing for Attack the Backlog. And then when all is said and done with the game, I'll put out a finished, more polished, final review type video that's akin to the way Attack the Backlog worked up until this point. That's still something that maybe I won't do, but I think I still want to do that. But this will turn Attack the Backlog into more of a game club feeling show where You'll have weekly episodes where I am talking about my current time with the game, how I'm feeling in the moment, and being able to go along the ride with me. And especially in games where it's more narrative focused and is broken into chapters, it'll be a real easy way to play along with me, whether in the moment at the exact time when I'm playing or months down the line, years down the line. So I think that is going to ultimately be the better way of handling Attack the Backlog, because it allows me to really focus on what I'm playing, not worry about streaming and chatting, play whenever I want and not just a schedule. So if I wanted to play a game on the weekend that I was playing for Attack the Backlog because I was just that into it, I wouldn't have to take that break. If I want to play earlier in the day or whatever, it gives me that freedom. And I think treating it more game club-ish with a traditional unscripted podcast is just going to be the best for everyone. And so that's going to be coming on Fridays. Hopefully I'll have enough to say about Ghost Recon Wildlands to put out an episode this Friday. We'll see though. This is all happening in the moment and workshopping and all that. It's all a very fluid process right now. And then Mondays are still saved for the eventual, who knows when, but this alternative to streaming does free up time and whatnot, so maybe this will allow the show to return sooner than later. But Mondays are going to remain for locked away for it's set aside for Unamazingly Baka, the eventual return of the anime podcast that I will do, that I used to do with a former friend, because I can't not do the anime podcast, wait for it, on a Monday. A-N-I, Monday, you get it, because it's anime, but it's also Monday, you put them together, you got on a Monday, it's great. So I can't release that show on any other day other than Monday because it's too perfect, quote unquote perfect, in my head. But that is a plan. I think I hit every point there, but the streaming future is dead. I might still, one of the things I was talking about is maybe doing, because my schedule would be more free and other people's schedules are more free on the weekend, of doing art streams or something like that, which is a much more casual, just chat and hang out type of stream on Saturday or Sunday or whatever, and having that singular stream. So that's an idea too. That's where we are right now. Streaming, backlog, no more. It was fun while it lasted. Not really, but it was there. I'm genuinely surprised it ended that fast, but you probably aren't. You're probably surprised I even lasted more than a day. But I'm excited. I know I said I was excited about returning to streaming, but I'm excited about feeling confident in deciding that this is not working very quickly and not sticking with something too long, letting it bog me down and break me down more and more over time, and instead being like, okay, this is clearly just not the right choice. This is not the right path. Let's not waste our time with it. Let's move on, try something else. And having the confidence and the comfort to be able to do that, I think, is a good thing. And so I am excited, genuinely excited to try this other path and see if that is my yellow brick road, to use a Wizard of Oz reference, even though the Wizard of Oz is not that good. It's not that good. Okay, people. I'm sure it was amazing if you grew up in the time and you saw it and you're like, holy shit, look at all these colors. Look at all these colors. But today, it's just, yeah, there's some colors here. But it feels oddly small in scale, and it's just whatever. Yeah, yeah. But enough about all that. Let us begin the show with what I've been playing. And then we'll end the show with what I've been playing. Only to say that I still find the narrative around Helldivers too amusing, because it's managed to do something that few games do, where even when people say bad things about it, they say them in such ways that are like, oh, this is actually great. I think it was on Polygon where one of the headlines for an article about, I guess, the one about mechs coming to the game, where it said, the mechs in this game suck ass, and that's perfect in Helldivers 2. That, oh, it makes so much sense. The mechs suck, and I love it for it. It's like, okay. So I guess Helldivers 2 manages to be the game where it can have shitty content in it, but it works thematically, so it's all good. Okay. All right. I didn't read the article, though, so it might not actually control poorly or anything. It just might have been an eye-catching headline that wanted me to click through, and I didn't want to click through, so it didn't work, except to get me to mention it on a podcast and how stupid I think it is. Woo! Let us actually get on to what I've been playing. Started with Stolen Realm. This is a really neat game that I wish I liked more, because I think conceptually it's very cool. It has all the trappings of a game that is a studio's first attempt. And by all accounts, me looking into it, this is the studio's first game. It has a very low poly art style reminiscent of Clone Drone in the Danger Zone, which I like, but it lacks a degree of polish that even that game had. So it does look a bit rough. There are no shadows under your character, which is something anyone who knows me and has been following me for a long time knows that is a big pet peeve of mine, because it makes the characters feel like they're floating in space and not actually grounded. And there's that disconnect that really, really takes me out. But I don't think that is something that a lot of people have an issue with. But what I like about the game, even though UI, we'll get into its issues, but essentially, it's a turn-based tactics RPG for one or up to six players, I believe, cooperatively, which is cool. And it definitely seems in the description that it wants you to play with other people. And I'll get to why I think it does and why I think that would be really cool. But you can also play by yourself, which is okay. And one of the things they stress in the description is simultaneous turns, so that everyone is making and playing out their turns at the same time on one side or the other, which I think could be really cool. But it's a traditional hexagonal based turn-based tactics RPG. You build your character, and then you can build other characters, or you're friends can build their own characters. Decent amount of physical customization, and then a lot of options to shape your character in the way you want them to play and feel. And I like all that. It's light on story. It has this cool exploratory mechanic in the way you go through areas where you'll go down paths and you'll pick one path or the other, and then it'll also give you an option, do you want a tough battle, do you want a regular battle? And I like that aspect of it, because it all feels, the way the game is designed and how it's way more about mechanics and less so about a very written and guided story, is that it feels like a, not skeleton, but an avenue for your own personal Dungeons and Dragons type of story, where the creative side of the whole experience in crafting your character, crafting the story, and all that jazz is left on you and ideally your friends to create yourselves. So instead of putting their time and effort into writing out a story and creating characters and building up this lore and all that, there's some there, but it's very light. They give you the freedom to create your own, and it makes the game feel great for a very specific type of person, a specific type of group who wants something that gives them that gameplay feel, that game feel, but allows them to create their own story and really role play. Yes, you have games like Baldur's Gate or Mass Effect, so on and so forth, where you get to build your character and put them into this handcrafted world with a clearly written story that may have a lot of side stuff, but it is written by someone else and instead allows you to do all that yourself for the most part. And I think there's something very alluring and cool and interesting about that and appealing about that. But the game just lacks polish. From that visual stuff, the lack of shadows, to not being able to see your silhouette when you are obstructed by a piece of the environment. You can rotate the camera, but there are plenty of times where I wanted to rotate it to a certain position and I couldn't see exactly where characters were because there's no silhouettes or opacity or any type of thing that allows me to see what's behind the tree if my characters or enemies are behind a tree, and that's a little frustrating. The UI on a gamepad especially is a bit clunky to navigate. I doubt there's an option for it because it'd be weird for it to be default to turn off, but I wish if you accidentally hit the end turn button and still had actions you could perform, that it always asked you, are you sure? So that you couldn't accidentally end your turn. And visually, it's just, it's rough. And the feel moving around the environment when not in combat and not moving on this hexagonal base where it's more free movement, it feels a little off. So I think conceptually it's very cool and there's a lot of good here, and I think with the right type of person, the right type of group, you could find the fun in it. But for a lot of people, I think they'll wish there was a bit more polish here, that it spent a bit more time in the oven. And I personally would love to see, the thing is, I really want to see what they can do with a bigger budget, a bigger team, more resources in a follow-up, because I don't think they could really update this in a way that would fix some of my core issues with it. Of course, they could add the shadows at the very least, but my concern is that they'll never get the chance to do that. So it's a tough thing, but I can't deny the fact that it's lacking polish. But if what I've said, the positives I've said about it, do sound appealing to you, I would recommend checking it out. But just go in knowing that there's roughness there. That is, again, Stolen Realm. Then Arzette, the Jewel of Faramore, is a game some of y'all may have seen. That it's heavily inspired by the Legend of Zelda CDI games, with that rude-ish, rough kind of Microsoft Paint looking art for the animation, for the cinematics, that has a certain charm to it. And then, I guess, 16-bit-ish art for the action platforming. And it's doing such a good job at eliciting that. Me only knowing those games from some of the cinematics I've seen, I've never played them myself. I didn't even know they had regular gameplay. I'm assuming they do, because since I don't have any first-hand experience with those CDI games, I can't say how one-to-one they are, but I'm assuming they're pretty similar based on what I've heard from other people. And that is kind of the problem, because I don't know how appealing this game will be to those without that experience. I think the art and the animation, specifically in the cinematics, still has a certain charm to it and will appeal to people who do like art in general and like offbeat art. And I really like when you interact with the character in the side-scrolling action platformer sections by hitting them with your sword, and then it brings that art to the foreground while keeping the gameplay art in the background, so you have this cool contrast. I really like that. I don't know if the CDI games did that. I feel like that is something new to this game. And it has the perfect type of, across the board, the perfect cheesy voice acting you would expect in a game like this with art like that. So it's doing a lot of the right things on the story and cinematic side. However, the gameplay may be true to the CDI games, but it's not that good. So that's where I wonder how much of this game's appeal is going to fall on being someone who is very familiar with those original games, and this is just hitting all those nostalgic notes. Because if you just step back and you look at it on its own merits, it's not a good platformer. It feels okay. I don't really like the visuals in those sections, in the traditional platforming sections. I find those areas pretty dull. There's a lot to do, seemingly, and a lot of characters to interact with, and places to explore, and some backtracking, and ways you can grind that I find kind of appealing, because I'm always a fan of grinding. I'm like, oh, I can just keep doing this and dying here and then just doing this over and over again. I want to get all these gemstones. But the gameplay just isn't good, and it reminds me, and this is where I was going with, I don't even remember where I was, but the whole you eliciting something that is not particularly good, that doesn't excuse you from the fact that then your content, your game isn't that good in this example. It reminds me of a lot of comedy-based games where part of the joke is how poor the mechanics are in games like these or whatever. Like with the first Matt Hazard game, Eat Lead, though I don't know if it was The Legend of Matt Hazard or whatever it was, which was making fun of stuff like Duke Nukem and other games, and making fun of third-person shooters and how they're designed in certain ways, and made fun of it not only by talking about it, but by doing the same thing that it's making fun of those games for doing, and that being a bad design choice and having that same design choice. Just because you know it's bad doesn't make up for the fact that it doesn't excuse the fact that it's bad for you. You don't get a pass on bad gameplay and bad design because you know it's bad gameplay and bad design. That's not how it works. And this feels very much like that, where it's cribbing off of these Zelda games that have often been the butt of many a joke, and people often refer to them as those Zelda games. Those are those ones. And there is something charming about it, but at the same time, it's also like, I don't know about this. I also just realized I've said like, I'm pretty sure, more than I've said in an episode in a very long time, so to Live and Large especially, I'm sorry. But that's where I am with, what is it, Arzette again? Yeah, Arzette. I really, really want to like it, but just not quite hitting. What is hitting, and is another game, this is actually just a collection of classic games, is the Top Racer collection. And this I love because I thought this was, I should have known it was a genuine collection, but when I was looking at some of the screenshots, all I could think was, man, this is really reminding me of the Top Gear games from the Super Nintendo. And it's because that's what they are. They're the Top Gear games. They just happen to be called Top Racer in Japan. And if you've never played these are classic racing games from that era, a la Outrun or Rad Racer and so on and so forth. Except, unlike those games where, and I believe that's how those all work, they were more timing-based and more checkpoint-based. In some other games similar, they might be gasoline-based and you have pickups to get and stuff of that kind. This is more of a traditional racer where you're racing laps and you're racing against, at least in Top Gear 1, and I think that, but I think it's how the other ones work. Was there a top? No, there's not a Top Gear off-road. That was Super Off-Road. But whatever. This is one of the few games I own for my Super Nintendo as well. But instead of it working on that kind of checkpoint system, you are doing these lap races and you are competing against a specific other opponent. And what's very unique about it, and I'm sure there are other examples of this, but it seems very unique for a game of that time, is that the game is always split screen, even when you're playing against the AI. So even if you're playing solo, you'll always see the AI opponent you are specifically racing against, and you're able to see where they are in the race, what position they're at, and can use that to try and plan out a strategy if you're behind or if you're ahead. And I think that's very cool. It's kind of annoying at the same time, just because it obstructs half the screen, so you don't get to see your complete screen. You're always seeing half of, you're always expending or wasting half the screen on the other racer. But I think it's cool. And I can't stress this enough, especially Top Racer 1, Top Gear 1, the first track, Las Vegas, but just the game in general, but specifically Las Vegas, some of the best music of that genre. I fucking love the music of the Top Racer, Top Gear series so much. And I think Las Vegas in particular is such a strong opening track. It's so good that it does make what comes after feel less good, even though it's still really good, just because Las Vegas is so fucking good. It's so good. But I think it's a really solid collection. There's online play as well, which I haven't messed with, but that seems new for a game from Cubite specifically, which is who published this. Though what I love is just getting these classic games on modern hardware, but this is nothing new with Cubite in that in their collections there are re-releases of older games. You don't get a lot of those extra features you might get in other collections that appeal to some people, even something as simple as high-res images of the box art, the manual, or anything like that. No little bits of history or anything. It's just a collection of the games. And the default controls are also fucking insane. I don't know what they were thinking with them, because the default controls, I think, were I'm playing on Xbox. Y for gas. Maybe A for brake. It was just insane. I had to change it. But you can fully customize the controls. There are 3 or so presets, but you can also just customize them however you like, which is really nice. So you're able to... They're just fun games, and you can play them on modern hardware, which is cool. I highly recommend them. And if you need a more modern example of a game of this nature, but that one is also more, I believe it's lap-based, but it's also worrying about your gas and everything. There are a lot of games that are similar to this, but the one that comes to mind that I really, really like, and it's a great Steam Deck game, and I'm blanking on it now, and it's bugging the crap out of me. Son of a biscuit. I was just telling Living Large as well. This is a good game for Steam Deck. What is it? Can I open up my Steam right now? My Steam is already open. Oh, yeah. I want to go to the store page real quick. Grand Theft Auto 3. Yeah. That's my birthday, sure. Does it say it has full controller support? Partial controller support. I knew it. And I'm talking about the original version, not the remasters or whatever. I knew it only had partial Xbox or partial controller support because it fucking broken as shit. It like half works and it was horrible. But that game's rad. I love that game so much. Let me see my recent games. Horizon Chase Turbo. Gosh darn it, how did I forget that? That's the one, but there are plenty of other games similar. But I can't recommend that collection highly enough. Next up is Earhead, which is a puzzle platformer with really nice art that has a bit of graininess to it, and it looks very good. But it seemed to have some performance dips here and there. Not too many, but it definitely seemed a little iffy. Mechanically, it didn't feel all that great, but the real crux of it is that you initially started out without a head, you're just his body, and you don't have to worry about shit. And then eventually, 10 minutes in or something, you get yourself a head, and now you have to constantly worry about how much air the head has, even if you fucking throw the head off your goddamn body, and you're like, I don't want to use this fucking thing. Then you still have to worry about the head losing air wherever you left it. So it becomes this thing where you have to constantly go to these and use these oxygen tanks to refill the air in your head, which also count as checkpoints. And you're constantly, you're just running around this area, exploring it, filling your head with air. And then there are other pipes of, or other oxygen tanks of different kinds that allow you to fill your head with hydrogen, presumably, so that you can float up to areas you wouldn't be able to reach otherwise. And there's some neat puzzle design elements in it, but after playing it for an hour or so, I started getting a little frustrated with it. And I didn't find the positives
to outweigh the negatives. It didn't grab me. I didn't love the way it felt as a platformer. I didn't think the puzzles were all that creative, early on at least. And there wasn't anything in the world, narratively speaking or anything, that was hooking me in and making me want to push through the hurdles for me, which were the feel and the puzzles, to hope that things would improve and to see what's next. So yeah, that didn't quite work out for me. And 10 Seconds to Win is a super simple, real basic art style action, not action, it's just a platformer where the title comes into play in that you have 10 seconds to complete each area, to complete each screen. And if you don't complete it in those 10 seconds, you reset at the beginning of the level. It's broken up into 50 levels, even though if you look at the trophies or achievements, you'll see trophies and achievements for completing up to 60, up to level 60. And you may be saying, well, what are you talking about? Well, that's because when you hit level 50, the game says, congratulations. And if you've already looked at the achievements before you hitting that point, you'll be thinking, huh? What about the other 10 levels? And that's because very much like that Froggy platformer or whatever it was from a week or two ago, the last 10, and I'm assuming it's going to keep going because it didn't stop at once I hit level 60, but those last 10 levels are just you going through the early levels in reverse again, sort of basically allowing you to get those last few achievements really easily. But it's okay. It eventually introduces, you have a little dash mechanic, and it will eventually add these little power-ups, whatever you want to call them, a la, I always think of, I'm sure other games have done it too, but I don't know if this is the first, but in Celeste, where you have those little parts where if you hit them, and you've already used your dash to refill your dash. So they use that sometimes. But it's really just about navigating these spaces as quickly as you can. One hit, one kill. It's not too challenging. You can get through it in 30 minutes probably. Somewhere in that ballpark. Get yourself 2,000 achievements or whatever the equivalent trophies is. And it's solid. It's a solid little session. I don't even want to say it because it is so short. If you like achievements and you like simple platformers, you'll probably have a decent enough time. I enjoy it enough. But it does kind of, it's not super challenging, so it does kind of, unless you aren't super versed in platformers, it might be a bit of a breeze. I played through the first 30 levels so fast that when I looked to see what the achievements were like, I couldn't believe I already completed 30 levels. So that tells you something. But again, it's 10 seconds to win, so of course you're going to be going through these levels pretty fast. And then the last game is, but that's again 10 seconds to win. Last game is Violet Wisteria. This is just, I really like the game conceptually. There's another conceptual win, but a far bigger loser on the follow through and how horrible it is. It's a side-scrolling action game where you play as a princess who has to pick up the sword and fight alongside her knights, I guess. And the whole way the combat works is color-based. It's it's reminiscent sort of Rise, Son of Rome, which was a game that attributed colors to certain types of actions, whether it be attacking or parrying or blocking, and tying those to certain colors that then correlated to the face buttons, which I really liked. I cannot recommend that game highly enough. It is so good. Xbox One, rough generation, but had one of the greatest launch lineups of any console. You can quote me on that. Dead Rising 3, Rise, Son of Rome, that Power Star Golf, whatever, was Killer Instinct a launch game, or did that come out a little later? Forza Motorsport 5, it wasn't the best Forza Motorsport, but it was still pretty solid. It was pretty solid. That was a good-ass launch lineup. And then there were some downloadable ones. I don't know if Max and the whatever was a launch game, but that was all right. Then you have Titanfall, not that much later. What a great launch lineup. But in Violet Wisteria, the way the combat works is that you'll have enemies that are either white, blue, or red. And then the way it works is that I believe blue damages. Well, because some enemies are more powerful and take multiple hits. White or blue damages white, white damages red, and red damages blue. And you can leave the on-screen hint, but it doesn't tell you what button you need to press, so it might not help the most, that having that option on, that hint. But you're going through these areas, fighting enemies, using the color to get rid of them. And there's an interesting mechanic that they play around with in some of the platforming elements that is cool, where if you hit an enemy the same color with the same attack, so if you hit a blue enemy with a blue attack, you'll bounce off them in the opposite direction. So you can use this if you're facing the opposite direction to go over large gaps that you wouldn't be able to jump otherwise by using the force of that counter, that ricochet, that bounce to push you forward, which is cool. But the game is just so ugly and not fun to actually play and control. There's a magic system that takes away from your time to complete an area. And what ultimately got me to stop playing is that I ran into these mini bosses that I couldn't damage with my regular attacks. And then I eventually got through the first one by using the magic attack. But then the magic attack didn't work on the second one. I couldn't attack him with my regular attack. And if I was doing damage with those things, it was not showing or giving me any kind of indicator that I was. Because you can't use your magic while jumping, only while standing still. So it's just a busted game. It doesn't feel good. It looks bad. And I hate all of that because I really, really, really like the idea of using this type of rock, paper, scissors color system and playing around with platforming by using the fact that you bounce off of enemies and also certain objects in the environment that are this a certain color. You attack them and that'll project you up in the air high. But it's a great idea. I think a pretty great idea, not a particularly unique one, but still a great idea that is so poorly executed, sadly. That is, again, Violet Wisteria. And that will do it for this year's episode of the Pixelated Sausage Show. Once again, I am Mark Kuznets. Y'all can find me pretty much everywhere at BX Sausage. The site is not what I want to talk about right now, because what I want to talk about is that if you enjoy this here show or any of the stuff I do and what have you can go over to patreon.com/pxs to support me and my nonsense that way. Again, new way of doing it at the backlog and all that jazz. Go back to the top of the show if you want to hear all that again. But hopefully I'll get that first episode, because I already have some thoughts about Ghost Recon Wildlands. So hopefully I'll get that first episode out this Friday. And the video version of that will be sort of like this, except I think what I'm going to try and do is just have the intro, and maybe I'll do the full camera like if I was doing for a little bit, or I'm just facing you. I have the introduction. And I want to still throw in my gameplay from that time frame, so it would be from this week. But I don't want to spend too much time doing a lot of editing or anything, so it'll be a lot more long cuts of gameplay and stuff like that. But I would still like to do that so that you have an idea of the game I'm talking about the whole time, if you are a video, a YouTube consumer, and not just an audio listener. So that's the idea there. But again, it's all being workshopped, very fluid. But I'm excited. I'm just excited about trying different things and finding what works for everyone, but me most of all, because what works for me and what I end up enjoying the most and finding to be the right choice is ultimately going to lead to better content for all of y'all as well. I believe that. I hope you all believe that too. And I hope you're willing to stick with me on this bumpy ride as I find my new footing. But again, if you do enjoy the stuff I do and you would like to support me and get access to an exclusive weekly Q&A as long as questions are asked, and maybe some other additional content, I'm thinking about other things that I could throw in there. But the Q&A is definitely something you get that no one else does. And I think the people who do get to enjoy the Q&A, enjoy it. If you ask me to sing something, I'm going to sing it. So far, I've sung... What have you asked me so far, Lunchbox? We've got Don't Stop Believing, Carry On My Wayward Son. There was... Was it... Pick Your Own Beatles Song or some band song. I don't know if it was Beatles. There have been a handful of those. So you could just say whatever. And even if I don't know the song, I will learn it or I won't learn it and then just Google the lyrics and think I know it and then realize, I don't know, I know this song less than I ever thought. But if that sounds appealing or just you like the idea of supporting me at a lower tier or whatever, that would be great. And that is, again, patreon.com/PXS. In addition to the Patreon, you can find links to the site, the YouTube, the Discord, and so much more over at pxsausage.com. But that is it. That is all. As always, thank you for watching or listening. I hope you enjoyed this here episode, and I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day. But for now, adios, arrivederci.